for another Michelle Monroe selection on the Midweek Drive for Siren FM.
Of course, ironically, given that it's Tallulah Randall who kind of alternates with her live musical selections, well, Michelle is known for that. Getting Tallulah's mum on to actually do a little promo for Michelle it keeps us together as a family, I feel, Michelle. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Alex, and you?
Very well indeed. We've got a terrific triumvirate of fine folk in the studio, two of whom are making their debut as far as the Midweek Drive in its entirety is concerned, and one of whom is making her debut as far as the Midweek Drive on an evening slot is concerned. Ooh. Maybe she was just waiting for the clocks to go forward and then suddenly emerge. Yes, we have the fabulous Rachel Warren from Bury St Edmunds, no less.
Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
We also have from Lincoln, because there is no other city in the world that can actually host the joy that is Michael Woodall.
Hello.
Oh, hello, Michael.
Yeah, Michael Woodall. Not Woodall Spa, but Michael Woodall in person. And, of course, from the joys of Hailsham, near Hastings, also reading drama in her second year at the University of Lincoln, that would be Lauren Buck.
Hello, Lauren.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read a lot of drama, Alex.
I'm sure you do, Michelle.
My life's a drama.
I know. It's the classic routine, and the goodies are the best in every sense of the word. We'll do our quick survey here. Lauren, have you ever heard of Matt Monro?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Michael, Matt Monro.
I can't say I have.
Rachel, Matt Monro.
I'm so sorry.
Unbelievable. But what joys they can actually have.
Get rid of that panel, please. For these newbies, then, this week I've chosen a song written and composed by Denise Haz-Norwood and first recorded by Joe Valino in October 1956, probably before a lot of them were born.
No, they were here in past lives, I know that, I can confirm. Yeah.
Now, one of the most popular versions was recorded by the singer Frankie Vaughan, and it gave him his first number one hit in the UK. The song first entered the UK singles chart on the 11th of January 1957, spent 4 weeks at the top and 13 weeks in the charts altogether. Dick James, Gary Miller and a certain Mr. Matt Monro have also recorded other versions of the track. Now, Matt Monro's first recording contract for Decca began with a mammoth session that saw the whole of his first album recorded in just one day. Studio and musician time was very expensive in those days, and great pressure was put on everyone to do it quickly. Now, one of the album's tracks was My Old Flame, and it was originally due to be released as the B-side to Gone With the Wind, but this was cancelled in favour of tonight's selection. Decca's practice at the time was to get their artists to record covers that were already hits, so it wasn't unusual to see two artists climbing up the charts with the same song. It didn't make much sense, and with no new material to call his own, Matt Monro found it difficult to establish a name for himself in the pop charts, but things were soon to change. Dad's Version, produced by Dick Rowe, who later achieved notoriety as the man who turned down the Beatles, was recorded at the Decca Studios on the 12th of January 1957, just 4 months after the song had reached the number 12 spot in the charts, and one day after Frankie Vaughan had a number one hit with it. So what is it, I hear you all ask? Why, Alex, it's the Garden of Eden.
When you walk in the garden, in the Garden of Eden, Garden of Eden tells you she is forbidden. Can you leave her there? When you're yearning for loving, and she touches your hand, and your heart starts a pounding, and you're feeling so grand, can you leave her to heaven and obey the command? Can you walk from the garden? Does your heart understand? When you walk in the garden, in the Garden of Eden, with a beautiful woman, and you know how you care, and a voice in the Garden of Eden, tells you she is forbidden. Can you leave her there? In the Garden of Eden, can you leave her there?
Blended. Okay, now do we know who Matt Monro is? Yeah. The third biggest export in the 1960s after James Bond and the Beatles. Very important. But the critical thing, of course, Michelle, as I know you're passionate to find out, is what did they make of that little number? Lauren, what did you make of A Garden of Eden?
Yeah, I thought it was good.
Rachel?
I really liked it. Yeah,
and she's very sincere about that because, as you're well aware, Michelle, Barry Sonnenman's people cannot tell an untruth. It's written into their DNA in every sense of the word. Michael?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Liked the voice as well, yeah.
Good. Quality stuff throughout. So are you staying at home over Easter, Michelle, or will you be sort of cruising once again?
I leave on Easter Day.
You leave on Easter Day?
Yes.
Yeah, there we are.
I'm going on Oriana and their Strictly Come Dancing cruise. So I might get my twinkle toes out.
Will Brucey be joining you? I gather he's not doing his TV work these days.
No, he doesn't do those shows. It's the dancers. And
I know, I'm just joshing. It's the important
thing. I miss Bruce, you know. It won't be the same without him.
Well, people move on. Without Brucey, what do you think, Michael?
It's his show.
I don't know, it depends who replaces him, you know.
Claudia Winkleman is often sort of spoken of as, if they can't get Michelle Monroe or Rachel Warren, it's going to be Claudia Winkleman. I think Graham Norton, and I don't think he'd be right somehow.
When Ronnie Corbett stepped in, it was diabolical, and everybody who'd had a go at Bruce for so long suddenly realised, I think, it wasn't quite as easy as it looks. Mm. It's because Bruce makes it look easy.
But then again, you haven't seen Bruce Forsyth advertising ready meals for chronologically gifted people, have you?
Absolutely not.
He's
not short enough.
It's very true. Lauren, Strictly with Brucey without... I mean, obviously the decision's been made, really, but as a licence fee payer, one hopes.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be... I don't think it'll be the same without him. I mean, like Michelle said, he makes it look really, really easy. And although people say, he's too old, and they complain about him, actually, he's really good at his job.
How old is too old, really? Rachel, what are your thoughts?
I think he sort of makes it, though. People enjoy listening to him, and he gives a certain... I don't know, he's charismatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's one of the old school, and he's classy. And I think, the show is him. The age is to do with, I'm sure, the stamina needed. It's a lot of hard work, that, to record that live and all the rehearsals in the week. And I'm sure he wants a bit of rest now. But I'll miss him.
Well, I'm sure that will be relayed to Brucey through the airwaves, because I know he was... He's been a keen supporter, and obviously probably worked with your father many times.
Oh, and he was his best friend.
There you see, that's the
you
reason.
You haven't read the book, Alex, have you?
Now, Michelle...
Now, come on. I think you ought to reread it.
I'm going to have to buy another copy, because I've given up on our midweek driver who 3 years
you
ago...
You said that a year and a half ago.
Yeah, exactly, and it's now three. So, yes, so I will obviously... Still available, presumably, and in paperback as well, of course.
On e-book, even.
Wow, steady
the
on.
Singer.
It's the exact...
The life and music of Matt Monroe. Alex, I expect you to have a copy by next week.
Named after, of course, the phrase that Frank Sinatra used when he used that very phrase to define your father. He is the singer. Yeah. Okay, Rachel, last two questions for Michelle Monroe, please.
So sure. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Always do.
Good. And will we look forward to talking to you again sometime soon?
Well, I will be there in 2 weeks, but not live, as they say.
It'll be pre-weekend.
But I have recorded something very special for everyone.
Absolute treat, as indeed every fortnight is with Michelle Monroe, and of course the magic that is Matt.
Looking from a window above, it's like a story of love. Can you hear me?
Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station, 6:30 past 6 o'clock UK time. And there are aficionados who might sort of think, yes, Yazoo, only you. That was a magical moment in the J.J. Abrams executively produced series Fringe Season 1, where we actually have Walter just sitting in his car, deserted, and you actually get the strains of Yazoo coming through. Isn't that right? Ace author and generally wonderful soul, who is the United States editor for the East Coast for sfx.co.uk and SFX magazine, Tara Bennett.
Oh, it is, and I can't think of better music to bring me in on, so thank you for that.
Tara, we've worked long and hard over the years planning the appropriate introduction for your good self. We had on one of our semi-regular specials with Dave Milling the wonderfully entitled Parsec, notion of Paul Terry, of course, who you worked with respect to Lost magazine, various other things, and we said connect with Tara about it. The words, the runes have actually been pointing you to the show for many a moon, you know, even before Dave Bradley actually took over, and lo and behold, here you are. She's great stuff. And whereabouts in the United States are you?
I'm right outside of Philadelphia, so East Coast. Mm-hmm. And yes, I feel very destined to be here. I feel like everybody that's some of my favorite people are associated with Siren. So I'm very, very honored to be on and talking with you guys.
There we are. And of course, with Ilana Rain and Annette Andra actually moving from East Coast to West Coast, there's obviously a huge opening for East Coast reporters, really. It's very important. When we look at your CV resume, obviously checking the right sort of terminology there, we see the Showrunner's Companion Guide, The Art of Rio, The Art of Epic, The Art of 300, 24, The Official Companion Guide. I know, Rachel, you were very impressed when I mentioned Tara's work with respect to the aforementioned Fringe.
I was. I love Fringe.
I love to hear Fringe fans.
Yes.
Thank you
what,
so much.
What is it about Fringe in particular that kind of works? Because I was looking at some of the season five shows, and I was thinking to myself, well, these are all interesting, and they're solid in their own way, but surely, you know, they're just sort of taking the alternate dimension thing and just putting it on that line. What are your thoughts on that one, Rachel?
You know, I think it was one of those shows that was so special because it really was character-based. You know, there were some really weird things that happened in that show, and it definitely pushed the sci-fi stuff with the alternate realities and time jumping, especially towards the end. But it really was about family and, you know, loving Walter and loving Peter and loving Olivia and all the different versions of them that they explored. And I think, you know, you kind of would go with the show, even to the strangest places that it attempted, because you love the character so much. And I think that was the thing that really captured viewers and made it such a cult classic and a beloved show by the time it ended. And everybody was so grateful, you know, that it lasted for 5 years. And, you know, we were able to kind of get a full story for all of those characters.
Would you agree with that, Rachel? I mean, as a fringette on the UK side of the Atlantic?
I would. I love all the characters. Like there's so many like quirks to them. Walter is just so lovable. And watching his relationship grow with Peter and how it changes and how he goes from hate to love, and it's just... And then having to restart that relationship again once the time jumps have changed and...
You see, I was thinking, I must admit, crossed my mind, and possibly Tara, you're ideally placed to comment on this, but surely it also just showed J.J. Abrams' obsession with wonky 1980s videotapes and machines like the Dharma Initiative and sorting out, oh, it's another thing they need to track down.
You know, there is a very big love at Bad Robot for anything that is strange and retro. And, you know, we had VHS tapes in the end that were core to the story at the end of the Fringe story. So, yeah, you know, you're always going to find those kind of retro throwbacks. And whenever they can shove them in, they do. And you got to love that.
Yeah, well, I suppose it works. Of course, we might look at Lauren and say, Lauren, you've never actually encountered Fringe, have you? Or have you?
No, I haven't.
What a treat you have in store for you when you get the box set to hand. And Michael from Mailpack Producers?
No, never.
Likewise. It has to be said, Tara Bennett is responsible for what I would define as probably the award-winning question of the 2013-2014 period. She asked it and put it to director Sam Raimi, and the question was, what can you tell us about your flying monkeys? Genius question. Absolute genius. You know, I mean, I just thought that's just a shoo-in. I mean, I was sort of looking through this particular thing, which if you want to check out back issues, it's SFX edition 231. And as well as obviously doing interviews with Chloe Moretz, star of Carrie, of course, and Bruce Campbell, of course, producer of The Evil Dead, etc. With Sam Raimi. What can you tell us about your flying monkeys? I feel actually, Rachel, we should actually introduce that as a third question than the final two sort of routines. What can you tell us about your flying monkeys?
It would throw people, definitely.
I think we need to contextualise
it. I think you absolutely should do that. I think it'll show the character of the person. It's how they answer it. I think that you absolutely put that in the staple.
So what was Sam's thoughts with respect to that whole thing? Because, I mean, in many ways, folk would actually say that Tara Bennett, she's got her academic scenarios as well. She teaches from that point of view. She writes on shows like Lost, Heroes, Chuck, Stargate, films such as Divergent, Immortals, Jonah Hex. Well, that's an interesting one. The Last Airbender, also quite interesting from the point of view of responses. Maybe they're due for reappraisals. I don't know. But in terms of that whole thing, was this something that you've always been a fan, or is it a case of, no, first and foremost, I'm a professional journalist and I must distance myself from my topic in every sense?
Oh, God, no. No, I've been a fan. I've been a fan since I was a kid, and I was a strange little kid that loved Star Wars and, you know, had Aliens posters on her wall and had the novelization for the Star Trek movies. So I've been a long-time nerd and have loved the genre for as long as I can remember. And I honestly really had no idea that this would be my career path. I was in television production for almost a decade, and then became a writer kind of on the side with the rise of internet journalism, and ended up having a career change in 2003 where I just went straight into writing. And it really is the thing that I had no idea that I could do professionally, and that I'm so grateful that I do it now and have been doing it for 10 years. And it's just been, you know, I definitely have a very strong sense of professionalism, and that comes from, you know, working on the production side for 10 years and knowing what the line is and what's appropriate and good questioning and booking for guests, which is kind of like booking, you know, who you're going to get your interviews with. But I think hopefully my long legacy of nerdism has informed the interviews and the questions that I have, because, you know, if I love something or end up getting exposed to something, hopefully I'm taking the position of what the reader or the other fan would want to know, and I take that very seriously.
Rachel, you've read the recent Soapbox, of course, in the current edition of SFX, which is edition 247, with, of course, the Game of Thrones cover that's actually on there. Yes. Thoughts and questions for Rachel?
For Rachel?
Indeed. You could ask yourself the questions. Or for Tara. I was very confused.
I could ask you something.
Well, exactly. You know, let's take Rachel's line first and foremost.
Well, I read the small section. It was about women in science fiction, and you mentioned I forget her name, the actor who played Turiel in Hobbit, the second one.
Evangeline Lilly.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I agreed. Like, she, because she portrays a woman. She doesn't need to be like wearing all like tiny things. She's just. She's like, I don't really know how to put it, but I just agreed with what she'd said. About being women.
Yeah, I think that's one of the great things that you've got more and more women that are, you know, headlining films, and they are genre films or films with action. And I think that one of the great things is that you bring really strong actresses into it, like Evangeline or Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow in the Marvel films. And they have a really strong sense of self. It doesn't have to be that they're chasing, you know, the bad guys or the aliens, and they're just looking like men in, you know, tighter fitting clothing. They have a different purpose and yet can be just as strong. And I love Evangeline saying that, and I love that Scarlett Johansson has been so vocal about that as well as she's progressed in the Marvel Universe. And as somebody that, you know, as a woman that loves the genre, I love that, you know, that hopefully the more that women can be strong and yet be feminine on screen, that the dialogue about it really will stop happening, because people will just appreciate it and respect it for what it is, which is, it's not something out of the ordinary. It just is the personification of what we already know.
Yeah, I would agree. I agree with that. I think that it's become more of a lot more women like science fiction now as well. Like, a lot more of my friends are more likely to be, yes, I want to go and see the Marvel films and things like that. It's not just a masculine thing anymore.
Captain America.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Captain America the Winter Soldier, wonderful example of good quality stuff there. Anyway, we already had a debate with John Jarrell in the first part of the programme about whether Game of Thrones was actually fantasy or science fiction. John takes Rachel's view on this particular point, says it's quite clearly fantasy because it's not set on Earth. I maintain alternate realities, alternate dimensions, it's certainly science fiction. Tara, where do you sit on that debate?
That's a good question. I would say that it leans fantasy with tinges of science fiction. I've talked to George for SFX, and he's very, very particular about making sure that the world doesn't get overwhelmed by magic, and that it isn't so dominant that it becomes kind of an out.
And this, of course, is George Martin, the writer of the whole Game of Thrones thing. So surely he should know.
Yeah. So he definitely has the tinges of otherworldly and sci-fi, but the fantasy aspect of it, I think it's dominant, and I think it's he tries to maintain that balance that it doesn't dip too much into the tropes of science fiction that become crutches for the storytelling. Yeah.
It's not like a Piers Anthony novel where suddenly we're going to get one of the characters whipping out as a stun gun or blaster, but you have got fantasy in there. It's a different thought, but still. Anyway, Tara, once again, you'd be sorted out to actually put that whole thing to rights. And do you ever get over to Bath, or is it just a case of, no, I stay this side of the Atlantic and I'm not crossing over unless there's significant sort of reasons to actually get over to this country?
Oh, I wish I could cross over more. I wish I was just in Bath last March. So I loved seeing it. I actually went to school in Newcastle upon Tyne at the Newcastle Poly when I was in college. So I saw all of your lovely country while I was there for that semester. I traveled like a crazy person.
You probably could actually say, why I pet, how's it Gannon? And actually sort of break into a Geordie routine just for that sort of side of things.
I swear, my best friend and I both felt like we needed to have translation for the first 2 weeks we lived there. We were like, what? Yeah. I thought that was English.
Yeah. See, you should have come to Lincoln. It's all right. Sorry, Newcastle fans, but there we are. It's a different line. There's Lauren. She had the opportunity possibly of winging up to Newcastle to actually see War of the Worlds on stage. You're going to Brighton. It's important. As we said earlier with John Jarrell, it's the first time in over a decade that Worldcon, the World Science Fiction Convention, is back in Britain, of course, later on in the year.
Yeah.
Which is great stuff from that. We've got Sci-Fi London. If you haven't met Louis Saviers yet, as the director of Sci-Fi London, now it's into its 14th year, and lots of features in SFX magazine. That's a treat. But as we sort of begin to head off into, the Warwick Davis piece, we've got Warwick Davis, then of course Phil Leonis. A reminder, of course, that not only did Tara Bennett write the book, or Tara DeLulu Bennett, let's get the full name there. Which do you prefer, Tara Bennett or Tara DeLulu Bennett? I mean, it's entirely up to you.
Bennett is actually fine. Bennett is great.
Not only did she actually co-write the text Fringe, September's Notebook, and of course Lost Encyclopedia, but this was the Amazon best book of 2013. I think that deserves a round of applause.
Paul Perry and I are very, very proud that we were one of his favorite books of the year, and that was our book baby, definitely, and we're very happy it was received well.
It was quality stuff throughout the whole sequence, but we have to ask you two final questions, making your debut on the production. Tara Bennett, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on this, your East Coast Midweek Drive debut for sfx.co.uk and more? Has it been okay for yourself?
Oh my gosh, of course. It's been wonderful. It's very international for my afternoon, so thank you very much.
So the next critical question before you fly over to Los Angeles and go West Coast, well, actually, we've got Warwick Davis before that. It's a pre-record with Warwick there. Can we look forward to featuring you again on a fairly regular basis and becoming and having you as one of our regular East Coast correspondents?
I would be so honored. Yes, please. Thank you.
I think that deserves another round of applause. Yay! Splendid stuff in every sense of the word. And indeed, if you like that sort of fringe moment, don't be frozen in amber, but you might recognise the significance of this piece of music.
Never reaching the end. Letters I've written